And the woman's like, so your son says you're a gambler. I'm like, oh, I'm never, all right, you're not getting into this school. I was like, yes, but I get paid for it on television. There's a little more to it than that.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by Movember.
We are Movember, the leading charity changing the face of men's health. Mental health and suicide prevention, prostate cancer and testicular cancer, we're taking them all on. Movember is more than a month. We are a year-round men's health movement because taking care of your physical and mental health is important 365 days a year. Movember knows that being a dad can come with some specific challenges, like the meltdown in the supermarket, the crocodile tears before bed, and the glued to the screen routine. So we've created Family Man, a free online tool featuring proven parenting strategies developed alongside leading global child behavior experts and designed for dads. The interactive episodes help you navigate common, tricky parenting situations built with advice from experts on how to look at parenting from a new perspective. Learn by doing and broaden your parenting skills with Family Man. Visit familyman.movember.com and check out the free modules with actionable parenting advice that works. That's familyman.movember.com.
What's going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast online. I'm very happy to have the one and only Cousin Sal. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, sir. How you doing?
Oh, thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, man. Congrats on your book, You Can't Lose Them All. We're going to talk about that in a second. We're going to talk a little bit about just how much fun it seems like you have, thing that you do in the world, man. It's really cool. But first, I wanted to bring you on and talk about fatherhood. So I know you got three sons. Talk about, you found out you're going to be a dad for the first time. What was going through your mind, Sal?
Well, you know, I break it down in numbers, right? So I was like, I got to keep this kid alive for 18 years. And then if I make this mistake again, I got to do that again for 18 years, and the years will overlap and everything. But yes, I mean, as you know, there's a tremendous amount of responsibility to go along with the joy of having a kid. And you know, I talk about it in the book. You want him or her, in my case, him times three, you know, to not make the same mistakes that you did. So those were the serious concerns at the time.
No doubt, man. And of course, people see you on TV and they talk, you know, they read from your book and they just see, you know, of course, the different bets and all that and the fun times you have, you know, whether it's on the Jimmy Kimmel Show or on Fox, whatever the case may be, your podcast. I think sometimes people take for granted when someone gets to be where you are, there's got to be like a lot of hard work. So hard work, I think your, you know, your sons will see that in you. But what are some of the other core values that, you know, you're looking to instill into them as they're growing up?
It's tough because I'm always, in a weird way, I really stick to the do unto others thing, right? Like, it's just very simple. Like, hey, would your brother like it if you smacked him in the head with a football while he wasn't paying attention, while he's playing Roblox on his iPad? You know, it just should come down to that, really. But what I did, you know, I play so many hidden camera pranks on people on Jimmy Kimmel Live, so it's hard for me to use that, you know, like that mantra, you do unto others. But I do let them know ahead of time that after the prank is played that, you know,
yeah.
We give them a gift card or we'll tell them to come to the green room or something. We treat them right and we let everybody know that it was all for fun, and hopefully they go along with that. Sometimes they don't sign the release afterwards and we're stuck with nothing and but an angry pedestrian. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the whole thing, right? That keeps everything in check if you can follow the golden rule.
Now, so let me just ask you that though, because you know sometimes we think, you know, the idea, do as I say, maybe not as I do, but like, is that something where your sons have brought that up like to you? It's almost like, you know, hey, what you're doing for a living, it might be fun and all that stuff, but they're like, hey, but what do you do when you like prank those people? Like, what's going on? Like, I'm guessing that has been like brought up by them, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, certainly the older one brings it up, and you know, my only response is, I wait for him to be distracted on his iPad and then I throw a football at his head.
Nice, man. What is something that your sons have taught you about life or about yourself in general? Like, is there something, I mean, we always know that we're the ones teaching our kids. We, you know, our kids think that maybe sometimes we have all the answers. As they get older, they realize that's not the case. But what is something that your kids have taught you about life or about yourself?
I think they've taught me about, you know, you have limited time to be a not a good father, but just like physically present for a lot of what they're into. It's hard for me to bend over now to pick up a ball. I like get mad at the kids in the living room if we're throwing the ball around. Like, I'm like, come on, Jack, just grab this. He's like, it's 3 feet from your toes. I'm like, yeah, I know, but come on, let's just do this. And my God, I don't know if I had kids, I would realize the deterioration of your body. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just out of shape, but it really does seem from 30 to 40, and now I'm turning 50 this year, that there's really a crazy natural decline in physical ability over those years. So unfortunately, it's thrown in my face a lot because it's very, like I said, having three boys, it's a very active family.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, I know a lot of dads and probably moms listening to this right now. I'm like, yeah, I agree with Sal. Like, as you get older, you're like, what just happened? Like, you always joke about, especially in, you know, in your realm with football and like Fox and all that. And, you know, just doing the different sports bets. Like, you look at like the age of like, you know, I mean, obviously take away Tom Brady, but the older you get, father time, you know, definitely grabs a hold of you. And that's true in the world of parenting, right?
Yeah, maybe if I switch to Wheat Germ and Kale, things would look on the up and up. But right now, the TB12 diet is not in my not in my focus right now. But yeah, it is kind of like having a dog. In that, you know, if you drop food on the floor, the dog will clean it and lick it up and everything. And okay, good. I don't have to pay a housekeeper or anything. But the same thing with the kids. I have three boys, and if I drop a ball, one of them will be around, hopefully, to grab it and just toss it in my fat belly to relaunch.
Nice. Two more questions before we get into your book. You know, sometimes when I talk to, you know, people who, like, parents have some cool jobs and all that stuff, they're like, my kids really don't care. But do you have some, like, cool street cred because of maybe the experiences your kids got to experience through your career? Or is it just like, yeah, dad does this and he sometimes, you know, jokes around, makes a fool of himself on TV, but like, do they kind of like think how cool your job is, or like, it's dad?
I think it's mostly it's dad, the way you said it there, because I don't even know if they figure out what they don't even know what to say I do for a living. Like, we had my middle kid was trying to get into a school, and you know, he had to go through an interview, and then we spoke to the person doing the intake, and afterwards, and the woman's like, so your son says you're a gambler. I'm like, I'm never good. All right, you're not getting into this school. I was like, yes, but I get paid for it on television. There's a little more to it than that. That ship had sailed. We couldn't save that one. But there are definitely some benefits. They got to meet the Ball family at Raw. We went backstage, and there's cool stuff like that. And I can get I can get Johnny Lawrence from Cobra Kai to do like a 30-second video saying hi to one of the boys or happy birthday because, you know, I was backstage at Kimmel or something. So there's definitely that, but for the most part, they don't really care.
Nice, man. Thanks for sharing that. And what is like one big piece of advice, maybe besides stop aging so you can pick up the ball, but like, what is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads listening to this?
Let's see. I would say go right back at it. If you're going to have another kid, just do it. Just do it. To try to you and the wife get pregnant before you even leave the hospital with the baby, because you're spreading it out that, like the way I did, this is not working out. I thought I could, but physically I can't keep up with these kids. And I'm not even like an Alec Baldwin dad. I'm like, you know, not 50, and I have a 6-year-old. So I should be able to compete with that. But it does get harder as you get older.
Gotcha, man. And again, congratulations on the book. You Can't Lose Them All. Your friends have kind of told you, like, you should always write a book. And sometimes people like hear that and like, yeah. But like, especially with your career and how busy you are, you're like, yeah, whatever, probably. But then you finally obviously put pen to paper. How'd you formulate the game plan when you kind of find like, all right, I'm going to write this book? Like, were there certain stories you were kind of like processing, like, all right, should this go in there? Should this go in there? Like, what was your kind of creative process when you started working on it?
Yeah, it's like, I wasn't even thinking about doing it. And then my pal Bill Simmons, who I do a podcast with every Sunday night, it airs Monday, he suggested it, and my pain in the ass agent James Baby Doll Dixon said saw dollar signs. He said he could make like 10% of $700. So he's like, he was into it. And then I was like, well, let me think. I've been gambling and doing this nonsense for really like 35 years. I sat down and did exactly what you said. I wrote down what would be the most compelling stories of my life and as they pertain to gambling. And luckily, the family background. You know, my grandfather is a great dude, but he would bet horses, and my Aunt Chippy would bet, video poker, and my grandmother was a bingo-holic, and I was like, all right, so I have the family thing to back it up, you know, and so that knocked out a few chapters, and then just along the way, just my many experiences in college, most of them bad with gambling, you know, we got in deep with the local bookie, my friend Harry and I, and he was nice enough to let us work it off by, he ran a rec league, a 13-year-old boy basketball rec league, and he let us work it off by, we would be referees, and we got paid $6 a game, but we got so bored with it that we started betting each other on the games. And so the crazy phantom calls along the way, there would be a travel that didn't occur or a charge or something, and the kids would get mad, and these were competitive games, and the adults would get mad too, and they would follow us out of the arena, me and Harry. And finally, like, the local bookie was like, all right, that's enough. I see what the hell's going on here. You guys are done. So, I mean, there are certain stories like that have to be told, as they, you know, they're right on point with the gambling stuff. So, like I said, I had like 40 or 50 of them. I think I narrowed it down to 35, and then just like that, you have 200 or so pages.
Nice. We'll definitely put up links on where people can purchase so you can't lose them all. It's a great read. I got a chance to check it out. And, when I was reading this, I'm like, I wonder, like, the stories that were up on like, you know, a wall, being like, all right, I love this one, but maybe we can't have this one because there are other things. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I think, you know, for me, like, I'm going to put this in the context of sneakers, right? I've been a sneakerhead. I'm 41 years old. So like when the Air Jordans came out, like I was always like, oh, I want them. And my parents were like, you can't get them. But then after a while, when I started making my own money, I started, you know, buying them in like in the early 2000s. And the reason why I bring this up is now because like sneakers are everywhere. You can't even get the shoes you want because everyone's reselling them. And I get it. Like, hey, make your money. And it's frustrating, but like I understand that market. Now, like for, you know, gambling and betting and all that, like especially when people were watching Texas Hold'em tournaments, I think poker started to get somewhat normalized. Everyone's like, oh, I can, you know, get the bracelet, I can start winning. But now right. You see like TV shows and even like NBA, NFL embracing the gambling world and all that. Like, you've been in it. Talk about like the evolution of gambling and is it almost kind of like where I use the example of like sneakers where everyone's like doing it now? Like, do you kind of see like the way gambling has gone because more people are doing it and you kind of laugh and like, look at the, not suckers, but like, look at these guys. They have no idea what's going on. Like, what's the evolution of gambling for you, you know, throughout maybe since you started to now?
Well, there is a little of that. I mean, there was taboo all over, right? There was a stigma attached with being a gambler. And like, you know, I even call some of my friends degenerates and people get mad. They're like, well, they're like, you know, it's never going to get accepted if you're labeling your friends degenerates. I'm like, well, you know, people who smoke pot are still stoners, right? But it's legal all over the place, right? But I think that's the difference in your sneaker analogy. Sneakers were always legal, right?
Yeah.
But gambling now is starting to become legal in some states, and then that allows people to talk about it. And I know for a fact there are some ex-athletes who gamble but don't really want to come out and say that they gamble on games. And it wouldn't even be bad. It wouldn't cost them their career. Their career is over. But it's just still a weird stigma attached. And as these states legalize, as it becomes kosher, as the bigger states, you know, we're looking good here. There's 11 or 12 states, but none of them are New York or Texas or Florida or California. Those are the big ones. And once those come to fruition, I think it's, you know, the floodgates will open. You know, I talk about marijuana legalization. Just think, as early as like 7 years ago, who were the punchlines for marijuana? It was Sarah Silverman. It was Willie Nelson. It was Woody Harrelson. And now on my cousin Jimmy's show, like every third guest will talk about vaping because it's it's legal and it's fine. So I think that's where we're going with gambling. And as a result, like you said, some of the you'll have your own sports gambling pregame show and everything else. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but I think the only thing most of the people I know care about for a pregame show are what fantasy players am I putting in my lineup and who am I betting, you know?
Yeah.
The interviews, whatever, it's fine. But I feel like that's what it breaks down to, and we're going to see a swift movement towards that format.
again, like, I know this is kind of maybe hypocritical with the question I just asked about everyone getting into gambling, but like, for someone trying to maybe, like, you know, now it's maybe legal in their state, or, you know, they're kind of like interested now because there's more information on it. What is like one like small piece of advice you'd give to someone who's looking to get into betting, like to maybe dip their toe in it?
I would say exactly that. Dip your toe in it. So I think there's different levels, right? So a lot of people start off, they do fantasy football, a year-long thing with their friends, right? Yeah. And that's great. You only pay one fee. You can control how much that fee is, right? If it's, whether it's $20 or $100 or $1,000, you're at your comfort level. If that's, you know, not shaking it for you or whatever, you need more, you do daily fantasy, right? You'll go to like FanDuel and put in a daily fantasy lineup and compete against strangers for a jackpot of $1 million, or you could do head-to-heads for hundreds of dollars. And if that doesn't tickle your fancy, then you move up to sports gambling, and that's a little more hardcore. So I think just find your level and obviously bet within your means and all those things. But there's also nothing wrong with just playing in a fantasy football league with your friends. So yeah. don't feel like you're missing out too much. I mean, it's still all consuming. I mean, honestly, I've been in fantasy leagues where it works out to like $3 an hour in terms of how much you're winning versus how much time you're putting in. So, I mean, you could definitely get your fill there, football wise.
So I love the fact that you broke it down per hour. Cause I'm like, you know, I've won a couple times in my own league. I won this past year, maybe because I picked up Mahomes and all that. But like, you wonder, like, how much effort did I put in this? And like, what? Yeah, I won the big pop. But like, what was like the breakdown? So I love the fact that you're breaking it down. I think one of the things that people will do that might not even they're considering, it's like gambling, but like during the Super Bowl, you have those squares, right? Or you have like teams and like some of those prop bets. I heard that you love prop bets for the Super Bowl. For you, like, what makes them so fun? Just like how ridiculous they are, like how long the, you know, national anthem will be, you know, compared like the over under, like for you, like what makes them so fun for you?
I think for me, it's more of a panic thing, right? Because it's like you have you have one game left. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's basketball after that, and there's hockey and stuff, but it culminates in this one game. And so if you had one roll of the roulette, right, are you a kind of guy that puts it all on black or all on red, or do you want to sprinkle it out? I like to spray the board. You know, I want to have money on, first of all, I'm motivated to lose money before the game even kicks off. So I'll have money, like you said, on the anthem, on the coin toss, on stupid things like that. But, yeah, I want to bet on all the props, and because it's going away in 3 or 4 hours. And yeah, I mean, I bet on the halftime show once, and Pete Townsend. It seemed so easy, the Who was playing, and I wanted to bet that Pete Townsend would smash his guitar at the end of the set. And not only didn't he smash his guitar, I mean, he'll do this like in a small club in Birmingham with nobody watching. This is the biggest stage in the world. But he put his guitar so gently back into the rack, like you would think it was like a 1951 Mickey Mantle, and he didn't want to bend the edges or something. And that's it. So I'm done betting on Pete Townsend.
Nice. And lastly, you know, I kind of mentioned about like your sons, if they like, you know, if you got some cool dad street cred for what you do. But for you, like, from your podcast, TV shows, cameos, and everything that you're doing, is there one like surreal moment you were experiencing, like, how did I get here? Like, you know, one of those moments, like, what's going on? Have you experienced? I'm guessing maybe a lot, but is there one that kind of tops them all?
There's a million, but and this one doesn't really have anything to do with gambling, but I'm looking at right now. I have Santino Marella in an airplane spin, and I wrestled in front of 19,000 people at the Staples Center, and I was always such a huge wrestling fan, and Rowdy Roddy Piper was my idol. Yeah. And somehow, well, through Jimmy Kimmel Live, they developed a storyline for me, and Rowdy Roddy would train me, and like I said, it culminated with an event at the Staples Center, and I remember just walking down the aisle to the ring and saying, how the hell did this happen, and am I going to survive this? And I only have the answer to the second one. I still don't really know, aside from the Jimmy affiliation, how it got to that point. But yeah, it was pretty bizarre.
Nice, man. And now I got the Fatherhood Quick Five for you. Favorite family movie you guys like to watch together is what?
Oh, interesting. We had so many. It would probably have to be in any of the Adam Sandler movies, maybe Happy Gilmore.
Nice. Good one right there. Favorite family song, or is there a band you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to when they got to a certain age to appreciate it?
Well, I'm good friends with Dickie Barrett, the lead singer of the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. And it's funny. I took my son to a concert, I think it was in February, before the pandemic hit, the Mighty Mighty Boston's, I believe it was at the Forum, and he enjoyed it, and hopefully it's not the last one he or anyone else ever goes to.
Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
I like Hawaii. I mean, Vegas, the answer is Vegas, but it gets too hectic, and I have to, I have to separate my pleasure and everything else. But Hawaii is not, I like where there's not a ton to do. There's not a lot of nightlife or anything else, and the kids could go off, swim, and I don't have to see them for 3 days or 3 hours. 3 hours. 3 hours it is, but yeah, I'll take Maui any day.
Nice. And again, there's probably so many for you, but maybe you can talk about the most recent one, but I'm always curious, like, worst bad beat for you is?
I told this on Jimmy Kimmel Live, and it involved Jimmy. I was writing for Jimmy. He hosted the Oscars, and I made a parlay, like a five-leg parlay, what they called, with best director, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, there was something else, and best picture. So all I needed was best picture to complete this parlay. And I had La La Land, and La La Land was announced the winner.
Yeah.
And I'm high-fiving myself in the back, and then I see, like, all these producers in ponytail scrambling, and I'm like, uh-oh, this doesn't look good. And as we know, they then gave it to Moonlight, so I actually had the win. I was announced the winner.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it gets worse than that. I mean, it was 100% in on the win, and then they took it away. And, you know, as Jimmy and the writers were still celebrating, you know, a job well done for the Oscars, I'm there moping like an idiot because I lost this parlay. I couldn't leave well enough alone, so that was pretty bad beat.
No doubt, man. And then lastly, top three words you hope your sons would use to describe you as a dad.
Top three words?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my youngest son has, since the pandemic, started calling me Daddo Fatto. So I don't even think you need the extra word. I'll take Daddo Fatto for now.
There you go. People, make sure you follow Sal on Twitter at TheCousinSal and purchase his book, You Can't Lose Them All, wherever books are sold. Sal, I know you're a busy guy. Really appreciate the time, and especially your thoughts on fatherhood, and I wish you and your family continued success, sir.
Excellent. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, pal.
Cool.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to theartoffatherhood.net.